Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the latest episode of The Shameless Plug, the show in which I sit down each month with the editor of Empire, Nick Desemlian, to go through that month's issue in, what would you say, Nick? Forensic, mind-numbing detail, delete as applicable.
Vague, waffly,
vague, waffly
vaporous
detail.
Yeah. Approximate detail.
Approximate detail. Very excited. Hello, Nick. How are you?
Hey, Chris. I'm very good. Happy to be here.
It's press day. It's always press day when
it's
we do these things.
It's press day.
How are your press day stress levels?
Fairly low level, I would say. We're okay. It's a banger of an issue, I got to say. And it's under control.
You do have to say that, though.
Yeah. It's not on fire. Things are not on fire, unlike our fire and ashes.
Hello. Hello,
so
it's exciting.
Fingers crossed.
We'll be talking about that issue in the next Shameless Plug, right? Or are we two issues ahead? I'm so confused about when our press days are. Anyway, let's talk about the one that is on sale right now. We're 2 weeks into the life cycle on shelves, digital and otherwise, Good and Evil newsagents, all that jazz. And on the cover is something we hinted at heavily in last month's Shameless Plug, which is Avatar,
yeah,
Fire and Ash, a true world-exclusive story on the cover of Empire magazine this month, written by none other than the man sitting across from me wearing a lovely shirt he got from Reese, and I'm waiting to come down to sale so I can buy one and we can turn up at the office wearing the exact same shirt. It is Nick Desemlian.
Hey, Chris. This shirt is made for podcast discussion.
It is such a nice shirt. Basically, I've realized why I like it so much. It's like a Fantastic Four shirt without having any...
Oh, yeah, it is a little
bit. It's got that sort of blue and white vibe going on.
Let's not plug my shirt, because it's
very nice shirt.
Sorry, can't have it.
It's a lovely shirt.
But let's talk about Avatar. I mean, I did kind of play the editor card this month, I got to say. There was a trip to New Zealand, and I took it.
A trip to New Zealand?
And
he bloody well took it.
It was a very long way, and it was worthwhile.
Because you flew to New Zealand, and you spent 2 days with James Cameron.
2 days with Big Jim. So I previously been to his house when he lived in Malibu. In 2018,
has he ever been to your house?
Not that I know of. He did have a virtual simulation of it there. That was a bit odd.
Yeah,
but he's always good value. And this is part of our Path to Pandora, doing something on Avatar every single month this year, up to the release of Fire and Ash in December. And we were kind of like, because we've been doing something every single month, we were wondering, like, what can we do for the cover story? Because we've already done so much.
Once you've done Mick Scoresby, there's nowhere to go.
Well, we haven't done him yet.
Oh!
That we know of.
That's exciting.
That we know of.
That is exciting.
But yes, we'd spoken to James Cameron twice already. Once solo, that was the very first story back in December. And then we talked to him and his two co-writers for the film. So we thought, how can we push the boat out?
Yeah.
And the answer was 2 days shadowing him.
I love that you arrive at that. The answer was 2 days, because this was your idea, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So why did you ask for 2 days with James Cameron? And this is something that you must have thought that they were going to say no. What are you doing, you idiot? We're making one of the most expensive movies ever made. Go away.
He's always been very open. We'd never done anything like this with him, but he's been very open and had kind of previously said yes to stuff. I hoped that he would say yes, but we had kind of floated it as 1 or 2 days. And I definitely didn't expect it to come back as, yes, you have 2 days, because that's just amazing. And it was incredible. It's like the perfect way to kind of... Yeah, like one up what we'd done already. But I think it was just the perfect timing, because he talked to me out there about the first two Avatar films. He wanted to kind of let them speak for themselves and kind of keep it all a mystery, how he makes these films. And with this one, he wants to pull back the curtain. He decided he wants to share how they're made. And they're incredible. Just sitting there, my head was spinning for 48 hours.
How did this get made?
Pretty much, yeah. And it was kind of lucky timing. But yeah, and it was incredibly unfiltered as well. It was amazing. It was like almost immediately, it sort of started off, I watched about 25 minutes of the film in the same room where we once reunited the cast of Bad Taste, including Peter Jackson. I think that was in like 2014. We had given Peter Jackson a chainsaw in that same room. So it was quite surreal being back there.
That's amazing.
We did that photo shoot. So I watched a chunk of the film, and then straight away, literally followed him, and he's quite hard to keep up with. He walks very fast down this corridor and into a room where the trailer was being locked. And immediately there was a problem. He didn't like the music, and he was very frank about his thoughts on the music. Mm-hmm. And I put some of that in the piece. But it was incredible. It was really like kind of being there by his side as he's problem solving. And
this was a full 2 days, right? This is like you were... You went home with him and you stayed in the same house as him.
Luckily, I didn't have to get up at the same time, because I did find out that he gets up at like 4:35 a.m. and kickboxes and does kind of Thai martial arts every morning.
Amazing.
He kickboxes with Stephen Lang when they're filming.
Wow.
But he had even done that during post-production the day I was there, so I was relieved not to have to partake of that. And
this is more of a,
by him.
Yeah. But this is more of a 9-to-5 thing, where you would turn up at, don't give the address, obviously, but I'm sure people, this is Wellington, right?
Yeah, this is Wellington.
This is Wellington.
Park Road Post.
Park Road
Post. They're hunkered down.
I assume it's on Park Road.
I think you might.
Don't give the address away, but
Sherlock
Park Road
Hewitt.
Post.
Yes. I'll have to do some research, but you might be right. And I believe Peter Jackson owns that, and then went across to Stone Street, where I
where's that?
Yeah.
They're really imaginative with their names in New Zealand.
Yeah, maybe it's misleading. But anyway, he did a demo for me of the virtual camera setup that he has, which was pretty insane. He had a scene that had already been shot. So you see all the Avatar characters, but then he's holding this virtual camera rig, and he can do anything with it. He's got these guys called the Brain Bar, and he shouts out like a ratio, a number, and then he can turn himself into a helicopter and do a long shot down, looking down, or he can do an ultra close-up. He can make it look handheld, but he has a certain way of walking, so he makes the camera feel handheld. So he gets in there, and he can shoot it any number of ways that he wants, and then go with the final one.
But the film is pretty much done, right? So you weren't actually seeing actors on the volume.
That stuff was done a long
that
time ago.
That stuff's done a
long time ago.
This is all post-production stuff.
And this is all post-production.
Okay.
But he can go out there and essentially reshoot. He shoots these films twice. So he does it once with the actors, probably more than twice, but with the actors. And then now in post-production, he can do anything he likes, basically. He has all the scenes. He can go inside them. He can shoot them from whatever angle he wants. So it's quite mind-blowing. And he was showing me kind of an illustration of how different directors would have shot the scene. So he did like a Ridley Scott one with a certain lens. I tried to shoot the Uwe Boll version.
I
did get to hold this camera, and it was terrifying. Because I'm like, James Cameron standing there, and I'm like, I don't want to drop his camera. And I just looked like an idiot. I didn't know what... It's pretty amazing. It's like a big Xbox controller. And he's just designed it and built it. And it's the whole thing was nuts, I got to say.
Check out the big brain on Jim. But yeah, 2 days with him. That's amazing. I think I did an hour and a half of them last year for the Terminator, for that cover feature. And he's just incredible.
The most interesting bit of it was the VFX reviews. So I got to sit in for like maybe 4 or 5 hours of VFX reviews. And he had a guy from Weta and a guy from ILM in two different offices. And he goes in and they show him the latest version of a VFX shot. And his feedback is so forensic. I mean, even more forensic than this podcast. Yeah, whether it's like machine gun fire, like strafing across, and he would be, no, that needs to dip at a certain point, or it's the way that a helicopter moves. And he's just said, I fly helicopters, I know this shit, at one point. And it's just every single, like the most tiny, tiny element of a shot he'll zero in on and then talk. And it's really like getting a science, seminar. It's incredible. Like his brain is quite unbelievable. So yeah, that was wild, whole thing.
Wow, amazing. So how did you leave it? Did you shake hands and walk off into the distance, or were you flying a great Leonoptrix?
I accidentally locked myself in a cupboard. No, I managed to leave with some dignity. It worked out quite well because, the Monday morning there was that problem with the trailer music, and then I left on Tuesday afternoon and they had just nailed the music. And if you've seen the trailer, the music's pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the challenge that was going on there. But there's so many things going on, and he's looking at all these shots completely out of order. And there's something like 2,500 VFX shots in this film. And so, yeah, I've got to see quite a few of them. I have no idea what the plot is still, because they were all out of order, and I don't know, they're all kind of disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a pretty huge film. I don't think that's a spoiler. The scale of it is pretty bonkers. But it's just really kind of cemented that even though it's such a vast canvas these films are being made on, like every detail is like agonized over and precise. So, yeah.
And it's a pretty huge feature as well. I think it's probably bigger than most cover features, longer, certainly. It starts off, James Cameron's ears are burning. So that's your opening line. You know, how did you decide? Because you could have done the entire feature section with this. You had so much access. You had so much Jim Cameron. You spoke to everyone else. You spoke to Sam Worthington, Una Chaplin, John Landau's son. John Landau's passed, of course, who's now a producer. Jamie Landau. You spoke to loads and loads of people who are involved with the movie. You could have done a 30,000 word piece. You did what in the end? 5,000, something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it could have been a lot bigger for sure. I mean, I did a 2-hour James. I mean, again, like he gave me a 2-hour masterclass where we just sat down and he went through clips of stuff and behind the scenes stuff. And he gave me what he said at the time was like the most detailed, you know, talk through of how they make these films that anyone's had. So, I mean, that was incredible. Obviously, difficult to get all that stuff in, and a lot of it is technical, but we are going to put a lot of that online. Near a release, I think the feeling was that because we're doing Avatar every month, we don't want to overwhelm, you know, an issue with Avatar stuff. So it's 14 pages, which is almost double the size of a regular one. But yeah, we didn't
14.
We didn't want to make the whole issue blue. But hopefully, it's still a great substantial read, and there'll definitely be more stuff to come if you enjoyed that.
Yeah, if you can't get out of it, get into it.
Get into it.
Get into it. Did you interview Piacan?
No, he was being difficult.
It's too painful.
His publicist is a squid.
It is too painful.
did talk to Una Chaplin. It's the first interview with Una Chaplin.
The best chaplain.
Arguably the best chaplain.
Yep.
Who was absolutely lovely.
I think it's arguable.
And she was in Switzerland sitting in a park when I spoke to her on Zoom.
There we go.
That was lovely. And she's really, really nice. And I think it was her first interview anywhere on the film. And Varang is kind of very much the big kind of element of this film that they are... front-loading in all the marketing, and she's on our cover, obviously, and I think she's going to be a pretty amazing character.
Yeah, Varang is the cover star, not Neytiri, not Jake Sully. I see you, Nick Desemlian. Why did we go with Varang on the cover?
It's interesting because we kind of made that decision before we'd seen even what she looked like, and I'd only kind of had James Cameron talk about her in interviews, but I think the new element of the film is kind of, you know, you want something that looks familiar but is new. And I think, you know, as the big kind of villainous new character, she just seemed the obvious one. But that very much kind of came from us. And we looked at a whole bunch of different art and just loved this image.
It is a striking image from a film that I am sure is going to be very, very striking indeed. Almost certainly going to be the biggest film of the year. Certainly biggest American film, because there is a Chinese film called Nisa 2, which at the moment is top of the box office pops this year with 1.9 billion worldwide. Most of that domestically, as in there domestically, as in China.
But they're just releasing it now in like America and a bunch of other places. Not here. Which is a
not
shame because I would go see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty huge. But
it is.
Will Piacan take it down? Always.
We shall see.
Piacan.
We shall see. Will nobody too take it down? We shall
could
see.
Happen.
It could happen. All right. So we don't have a lot of time because of the aforementioned press day, and Nick has to run off to a meeting. So I did say last time, and in fact, I put out a shout out on Twitter and Blue Sky for people's questions. We were going to make this a listener question special. I don't think we have time for that, but we will do. I've just literally made this decision in the last 35 seconds. We will do a listener question special, Nick. So we'll do a
bring it on.
Yeah. So we'll come in maybe next week and we'll sit down and we'll do a shameless plug listener questions special. How's that sound?
Can I ask the listeners questions? Guys, I need help, please. Seriously, please.
There's some good questions in there.
Good.
Yeah,
let's do that.
Yeah. So let's move on. Let's move on and race through the issue as best as we can. It's not all Avatar. It's not all about Nick's incredible 2-day journey down to New Zealand to hang out with James Cameron. Is that the best access you've ever had personally? Have you had more time with a director or on a production?
I mean, just in terms of a film, Skull Island was hard to beat. That was one where I got to go to Vietnam, Hawaii, and Australia. The Gold
Coast
of Australia.
Australia is disgraceful.
And I saw Sam Toy formerly of Empire, while I was out there. But
because he was doing mocap for Kong.
they were like,
he's too angry.
Tone it down a bit, guys. So yeah, that was pretty nuts. I mean, in terms of and during that, I spoke to Tom Hiddleston, the lovely Tom Hiddleston, many times. But yeah, I think for a director, this was pretty unbeatable. And yeah, anyway, we've talked enough. We've talked enough about that, but it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I won't say what mine was. Maybe I'll say it on another show. Yeah. But it was an interesting one.
I also got to meet Richard Taylor,
Richard Taylor.
I got to meet the Richard Taylor.
You got to meet Richard Taylor. Yeah. Was he holding a massive big ear show?
He had something which I'm not allowed to talk about.
Oh.
I saw something in his basement.
Wow.
This is going to sound like more sinister.
It wasn't sinister,
but he had something very cool that he demoed that I can't talk about, but it's maybe soon we can talk about it.
You've said too much.
Yeah.
I'll have to have you killed. All right. Also in the feature section, we have all sorts of goodies. My word, do we have goodies. We have a feature on him, which is, sounds like a Michael Bluth, film. Him? What's him?
Him.
And why do we have a feature on it?
Much like the opening of The Last Boy Scout, it combines American football and horror.
Ooh.
Jordan Peele produces it.
Yeah.
And Justin Tipping directs
yes.
it.
Yes.
And
the tipping point.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Yet to be seen. But it's it looks really kind of cool and creepy. Our headline for it is Bad Sport, and it's basically a psychological horror crazy thing set in the world of American football.
Ooh, that's
and,
exciting.
Yeah, we talked to Jordan Peele. We talked to the actors.
Tyreek Withers and Marlon Wayans.
Yeah. About how this film came to be, that Justin Tipping has background in American football himself.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, it's a good read.
Ooh.
It looks freaky. There's a shot that we have of sort of strange goat creature.
Yeah.
Which intrigues me.
There's a lot of cool stuff. There's a lot of great stuff inside the issue. That is very, very good. All right, I've got to do the opening sentence. I've made this commitment. The feature was written by Amon Warman. Amon's opening sentence is, how much are you willing to sacrifice to be great?
How much are you willing to sacrifice to be great, Chris?
None. I don't have much to sacrifice, if I'm completely honest. But if you're interested in making a Faustian pact, then please do get in touch with me.
You know his address.
Yes.
He's open to infernal offers.
Chris at empiremagazine.com.
I will sell myself for surprisingly little.
I mean, just a set of new Callaway clubs, I think, and maybe a season ticket to Liverpool.
I would sell myself for a cup of coffee at this point in Preste.
Oh, a sure SM7 podcast microphone. Those things are
Nothing bad can happen.
This is a great feature. The next feature is great. And this next feature is great. The headline is Back for Levinses, and it is a feature about Spinal Tap 2. The End Continues. I hope the rest of the film has jokes as good as the title. Yeah. And this is the return of Spinal Tap to the big screen. All of them back. Chris Guest, Michael McKean, who I can't decide whether he's Michael McKean or Michael McKean, because I saw an interview with Ray Shehorn last week where she said McKean, but I've also heard it McKean. Anyway, Harry Shearer, Rob Reiner, they're all back. Marty DeBurgi's back, and they've made another, if you will, mockumentary. And Alex, Jesus Christ, this is a hell of a thing.
More exciting even than the fact they're back with a new film is the fact that we managed to, Alex managed to wrangle them all together. The members of the band, not the actors who claim that they are the band members, but the actual Nigel Tufnell, David St. Hubbins, and Derek Smalls,
yes,
plus Marty DeBurgi,
yes,
the director of Kramer versus Godzilla, and other works. This is a thing of joy. That Alex says.
This is a joyous thing of joy.
Just madness. Just glorious, glorious nonsense. And at one point they accuse Alex of being a muckraker. But as one of them says, somebody's got to rake the muck. And it's tortured analogies. It's just Spinal Tap. Glorious gobbledygook.
Yes.
I loved reading this. It's a miracle that this exists. I'm so happy.
So this was a one-hour conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
Between Alex and the four guys who were all on Zoom.
With the cameras off.
Cameras were off.
Just the voices.
To maintain the illusion.
What illusion?
Yeah. Of course, yes, yeah. You're right. And I, this is incredible. I mean, you, Nick, you have interviewed comedians in character before. It's a very disconcerting thing.
Yeah, we did like, Gough Marenghi. We did the Gough Marenghi guys.
Yeah, you did Richard Iowati and Matt Holness
and
in character.
In costume, and they were in
character
costume.
And costume yeah. as Dean Lerner and Garth Marenghi. Yeah. And they didn't break once. No, and they were just saying some of the funniest shit you will ever hear.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I don't think I've had that experience.
Yeah, it's joyous. And I mean, these guys are like, it was so read the article because it's just great. I mean, it's so funny. It's all off the top of their heads and they're just riffing with each other and it's so dumb and so funny. I loved it. So, yeah, if you love Spinal Tap, if you haven't seen Spinal Tap, it's getting re-released.
Is it?
Go see it. For the 41st anniversary.
On the smallest screen possible.
it's an amazing film. And one of my favorite DVD extras of all time is the commentary on the DVD, where it's, again, like them doing commentary. Even over the menu screen, they go, play. They're going through all the things on the menu screen. They go, play. We haven't brought our guitars. Scene selection. From which movie? they're getting more and more confused. And then they do a great commentary in character where they're accusing Marty DeBurgi of having a false beard. But this feels like a sequel to that, and it's so funny. I loved it. Can't say enough good about it.
Alex's first line, before it's a Q&A piece, but he writes a little intro. When we first met them, Spinal Tap was suffering implosion, and in the case of one of their drummers, explosion.
That's good.
Lane Waste is the headline. Nick, Toxic Avenger is the feature, but not the old Toxic Avenger, not the trauma movie. This is the new one, directed by Macon Blair. And starring Peter Dinklage.
Yes, we've gone full slime lords.
Yeah, this film's been on the shelf for a while, hasn't it?
Very slimy headline treatment. I got to say, props to our design guys for that because it looks authentically gross.
They slimed it.
It looks brilliant. This is the, I think, quite delayed. I think this was shot a while ago,
yeah,
right?
3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Peter Dinklage.
They didn't think this movie was going to be released.
It's Elijah Wood.
It is.
Kevin Bacon. Yep. And Dan Jolin has done.
Dan Jolin's in it as well.
Dan Jolin is not the Toxic Avenger.
I mean, in many ways, he is.
No matter what you hear, that's not true. But yeah, he's gone straight to the source. And this piece is great. Super interesting. Very strange film. I'm not massively a trauma guy myself,
no.
But I'm intrigued to check this out. Have you seen the original?
Many, many moons ago.
Yeah.
I wasn't taken by it, if I'm completely honest, but this has got actual production values and Macon Blair has got this weird skewed sensibility that is exciting and interesting and, you know, at the very least, it's going to be a curious oddity, I would say. So, you know, I'm glad it's not lingering on the shelf.
Yeah.
Like a number of other films I could name.
It's been unleashed. It's laying waste. And there's a really fun sidebar titled True Tromance, where Lloyd Kaufman, the one and only Lloyd Kaufman, gives some interesting insights into some of his groovy masterpieces, including hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm and Citizen Toxy, the Toxic Avenger 4. And it's short but sweet.
That may be the best get in this issue, and you spent 2 days with James Cameron. Dan's opening line, a gang of cackly miscreants tear down the street in a car.
Right away, you got him by the Jaffers.
Right away, you got him by
there's
the
car.
Rick Jaffers.
There's a street. Tell me more.
Yeah, I mean, so exciting.
Yeah.
next feature, I'm sorry we're racing through this, but I want to get to Beth's section, John's section, and my section, the best section. Open Up is the headline. The film is A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey. Colin Farrell, Margot Robbie, Coconut, the director. Ayanna Murray writes. Nick speaks.
Do I?
Yeah.
This looks interesting. It's got magical portals. It's got Margot Robbie doing, I think, her first role since Barbie.
Yes, I believe it is.
And so, yeah, we talked to Colin Farrell. That's a great pairing.
Lovely pairing.
And Coconado, who is brilliant. He did After Yang, right?
He did.
Yeah, and he's a really interesting kind of up-and-coming director. This is his biggest movie yet. And Ayanna Murray does a really nice job of explaining where this film came from. And it kind of, during pandemic, I believe Coconado kind of started watching a lot of anime and especially some Miyazaki stuff, and it's sort of the film kind of came out of that. So
almost like a live action Miyazaki.
Yeah, it's almost like a live action Miyazaki. So I'm excited, and it's got lots of magical portals and stuff like that. So
that's amazing.
I'm up for it.
Ayanna Murray's opening line: like everyone else, Kokonada had been stuck indoors. There you go. I think that voice enhances people's opening lines. I don't know about you. Next up, you'd be delighted to know I didn't write a single feature this issue. Nick, why was that? Why was that, Nick?
We mistook you for the Toxic Avenger. I don't know. I don't know, Chris. There must have been a good reason.
I mean, I wouldn't get me to write a feature, to be honest either. No. So there you go. Anyway, here is a cracking interview with one of my favorite British actors. And it is a Q&A with David Johnson, the star of Rye Lane and Alien Romulus, and the winner of the EE Rising Star Award at this year's BAFTAs. And he is on the way up. He's in The Long Walk, the Stephen King adaptation, which is coming out in September. Very good. And this is Ellen E. Jones, who interviewed him.
So this is a digital cover as well. Usually when we do a big shoot and a big interview, Q&A interview like this, we do somebody who's very established with a big body of work behind them. But sometimes there's someone who is up and coming, who is so exciting that we're all just kind of like, we need to do this person. And David Johnson, very much that guy. I mean, everything he's done has been really interesting and also really varied. You know, Rye Lane is so different from what he did in Alien Romulus. I thought he was the best thing about Romulus. And he's got The Long Walk coming up. He's doing a film with Frank Ocean, or is he?
Or is he?
He's just super interesting guy. And it's a great interview that Ellen did with him. He gets very, he talks about being an introvert and how he sees life. And, you know, I love him in industry as well. And his character in that is so different to all the others. We did a great shoot with him here in London. And he was really up for it. And if you see the opening image, he just got up on a big steel girder and hung off it. And fortunately, didn't explode or anything. But no, the shoot is amazing as well, I got to say. It's really, really cool and relaxed, but kind of really has his spirit.
Yeah. It's terrific. All right, Ellen's opening sentence. There's a specific smile that David Johnson has in his repertoire. Head slightly bowed, eyes looking upwards, mouth lopsided at the corners.
I'm going to just put it out there. I don't think that voice helps anything.
I think it enhances. I think I should do the entire magazine in the audio book.
Yeah.
I think I should do it in that voice.
I love that opening line. I think that's it's spot on.
It's a spot on
opening
line. And
he does that smile on the very same page.
What? Probably it's his smile. Who else's smile is he going to do? Last feature is one of our deep dives, and it is into Robert Altman's Popeye, which if you've never seen it, I'm not sure I would recommend you do, but it's certainly interesting. It's a curious oddity, right? As I just described, The Toxic Avenger. And this is the movie he made, the Popeye adaptation he made with Robin Williams and Shelley Duvall back in, 1980, I think it was?
Yeah.
And this was a famous disaster, this one.
Yeah, I mean, this was such a fun thing. Jamie Graham brought this one to us. And pitched it, and he is an enthusiast of this film, I think it's fair to say. I mean, even though it's not a classic, it's certainly interesting. I think Ben Travis is also very interested in Popeye specifically.
Is he?
The sets are still up in Malta. They've just left some of the sets there, and they've become like a big tourist attraction. And I know Ben is interested in that and wants to visit them at some point.
Interesting.
We've talked about it. But yeah, Jamie brought this idea to us, and he did a great job of tracking down people to talk about this film. He's talked to Robert Altman's son, Stephen.
If you talked to Robert Altman, I would have been very impressed.
Yeah, that would be a coup. He talked to a couple of the crew, and I believe he talked to the guy who designed the Popeye's biceps. So Robin Williams like put on these weird sort of fake arms,
yes,
big and muscly, and we spoke to that guy. So that's a deep dive, and
yes,
the stories are amazing, and it was a famously cocaine ridden set.
Yes, sadly none of the principals are still with us, but it is a cracking feature. Big old deep dive into that. Opening line: Robert Altman is battling an unruly octopus. Are there any ruly octopuses?
That's a good
or octopi?
Question.
I don't know. I've never really heard of a ruly octopus.
Just a very tidy octopus. The one in my octopus teacher was quite well behaved.
All right. Sadly, we are running out of time, and I don't want to diminish the other sections, especially since one of them is my section, Final Cut, the best section. But we should probably pick out highlights, I'd say, from those sections rather than go through them page by page as we have previously. So, Nick, let's go to Beth Webb's section, which is at the front of the magazine. It is First Word. It is the news section. Let's pick three things from it that you think people will, you know, sort of gravitate towards. What do you like? Nick is frantically turning the pages.
Let's talk about you. Talk about Running Man.
Yeah.
You spoke to Glenn Powell.
I did.
And we have a shot of him running,
yep.
Man.
We do have a shot of him running.
What was Glenn Powell like?
That's
how we open the First Word section.
He's very, very lovely. I've had occasion to speak to him a number of times recently. Make of that what you will. And yeah, he is very, very sharp. He is a man who I think is really, really refreshing, because he is a man who, I remember speaking to him for Top Gun Maverick, and he was talking about how he wanted to be Tom Cruise when he grew up, essentially. And he wants Tom Cruise's career, and he's not ashamed of saying he wants to be a giant, massive movie star, because that doesn't happen a lot these days. You don't get people who will nakedly express their ambitions. But that said as well, he is so smart, so sharp about making it happen, and it's sharp in the choices that he makes, and the things he turned down Jurassic World Rebirth, which I think would have been a Jonathan Bailey role, and that's a smart decision. I think he would have, you know, I don't think anyone's coming out of that movie raving about Jonathan Bailey's performance, and that's all due respect to Jonathan Bailey, but maybe he gets lost a little bit amongst the dinosaurs, and I think Glenn Powell knew that could happen to him as well, and so he decided to go for The Running Man instead, and this is very much his big solo breakout star vehicle. So
he's got three things in his favor. He's extremely good looking.
Yep.
Gotta say.
Mm-hmm.
He's extremely likable.
Oh.
And he has a very cool dog called Brisket.
Ah, you're talking about Glenn Powell, not me.
Yeah. This is awkward now.
I met Brisket.
You met Brisket.
I met Brisket
on the set of Running Man.
On the set of Running Man, yeah. Yeah. Can I say that? I have now. I met Brisket. And for 5 minutes he lived on my lap, and it was very, very, very cool. Yeah,
amazing stuff.
Well, good stuff.
Maybe we'll do a brisket profile at one point. We haven't only got time for a couple of things. There's lots of previews in the section. There's Frankenstein.
Yeah, that's me.
There's
again.
There's Roofman. We get into the whole Bond, Denis Villeneuve-ness. I want to just give a shout out though to John Nugent for his platform piece on baffling character posters. And the platform is a kind of newish regular franchise, we call it, where we basically just people just vent. If you've got something on your mind, you can just put it here. And John has been getting increasingly bothered by weird character posters highlighting characters.
And rightly so.
Yeah, so maybe unfairly, we've picked on Beck Bennett for Superman and his character who, can you tell me his character name?
Steve Alt.
Right. But I mean, Steve is just a symptom. He's not the problem. He's just. We also, you know, have the goats from For Love and Thunder. They got their own poster. I mean, there are many examples of like, why does this poster exist? Who is putting this on their wall? So John has a very entertaining rant about that.
Steve Lombardi.
And then I want to give a shout out to Beth Webb herself, section editor, for a great piece on new kind of technology, new types of cameras, jumping off of 28 years later and Danny Boyle's use of iPhones to do what he calls, I believe he said something like a poor man's matrix, poor man's bullet time. But also what was, you know, the stuff that was used in Sinners, the fact that Christopher Nolan is shooting the whole of the Odyssey in IMAX, so he's developing that tech, and it's super interesting, given that it's, you know, quite techie
blimey
subject, but it's changing the way that films are being used and films are being made.
John's section, the review section, as ever, has all the film reviews and all the TV show reviews and all the book reviews and even a game review or two, I think, that you could possibly wish to read. It'll set you up for the month of movie going. It is absolutely belting. And then real quick is my section, the best section, the Final Cut section. And I'm going to pick out the my 75 highlights from this. No, the three highlights from this. One is I got to spend some time with Jeremy Renner, who has a book out called My Next Breath, which details not his career. If you are looking for Avengers anecdotes or stories of what it's like to be on the set of Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, you are not going to get them from this book. If you want to know what it's like to be in the Hurt Locker, go somewhere else, my friend. If you want to know what it's like to be trapped under a 14,000-pound snowcat that has inadvertently run you over on New Year's Day on a property and effectively killed you, then this is a book for you. Because Jeremy Renner, a bit like Alan Partridge, needless to say, he bounced back and he's alive and kicking.
Yep.
And I don't recall really having met someone with so much energy for a long, long time. He bounced into the room. He sat down. He had a cookie that was on the table. Said he shouldn't be eating it, but he wanted the sugar anyway. Since he nearly died 3 years ago, because as he chronicles in the book and discusses in the interview I did with him, he did die for a short period. He has, he has a newfound lease of life. He has a newfound respect for life, and he seems to have channeled that into an incredible amount of positive energy. That's certainly what I encountered when I sat down with him for this interview. And it is kind of humbling, quite frankly.
It's a really interesting interview. Mm. I love that you end by spitballing alternate titles for his book, which is called My Next Breath. You suggested it be called The Hurt Locker.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's... I'm surprised he didn't go with that.
No. My Next Breath, I think he wanted something a little bit more positive and optimistic.
Right. The Hurt Locker is just a cheesy pun.
It's a cheesy pun.
Yeah. Well, there's
but
still
also,
time to change it for the
he
paper.
He was trapped in the Hurt Locker for a long, long time. I mean, the recovery from this thing was horrific. But My Next Breath is about his soul thought process as he was crushed under the snowcat and as he was bleeding out with, the air ambulance coming. He was literally bleeding out. He did die for a few minutes, was just focusing on his next breath, just trying to do the next breath.
Yeah.
And can I do this? All right, I've done one. All right, now I'm going to do the next one. And just the process and the energy that took.
It's a great emotional read.
Yeah.
Arguably worth the price of the issue itself.
Oh, come on, man. You spent 2 days in James Cameron's thrall. I had 40 minutes with Jeremy Renner. It's not quite the same, but I'll do the voice.
But I mean, when you have an interview that's not really, I know it's promoting the book, but when you have a really heartfelt, emotional heart-to-heart with someone, that's special because that doesn't happen every day.
Yeah, it's one of those interviews where, sometimes I wing my questions, sometimes I wing my interviews, and this one I had a bunch of stuff written down, a bunch of stuff that I wanted to talk about with him. My opening gambit was, as I say in the piece, my first question isn't even a question, it's simply, Jesus Christ, Jeremy Renner, Jesus Christ. And he went, yeah, I know.
That's how I started my James Cameron interview as well.
Because it's astonishing when you read this book, because we all had an idea of what he went through, but when you read the book, you have no idea what he went through. It's incredible. Yeah. And I had some things I wanted to hit, some touchstones I wanted to hit, and then he's just such an ebullient ball of energy that a lot of that stuff fell by the wayside. But, we talked about some movie stuff, but by and large, it is about, just recovering from fucking near death. Anyway, the voice says that Jeremy Renner bounds into the room and greets Empire with the enthusiasm of a man who knows that he really shouldn't be bounding into any room at all.
Mm.
So there you go.
There we go.
What else is in this one? There's a good ranking. We did the best animated feature Oscar winners.
Yeah.
Ollie Richards did a brilliant masterpiece about Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah.
And this is one of my other favorite things from the issue. I got to speak to Joe Carnahan and Jason Patrick about their classic cop thriller Narc, which hasn't turned 25 but is being re-released. And I got to sit down with them both, not together, but separately. And they were both terrific, absolutely terrific. That's a really great film. It's people haven't seen it.
Ray Liotta performances.
Like, yeah,
really, really amazing performance in that.
Yeah.
I want to also shout out, I don't know if we've talked about Special Thanks to specifically, but I think it's such a fun read every month. This is your idea, right? Where
yep.
when you stay long enough, if you sit all the way through the credits, you get rewarded with a little list of people who the director is thanking.
Yep.
And sometimes you get an unusual name and you're like, what? Why?
Yeah.
You know, for instance, people are talking recently about David Fincher being thanked at the end of Weapons. But you spotted that David Lowery gets thanked in all kinds of films. And so you kind of got the stories behind those. And I thought yeah. that was really cool.
Yeah.
It's made me, this feature has made me start sitting through films every time now.
I know.
To make a little note of who's thanked and why.
Because I've done this, I'm a credit sitter. I always have been. And not just because I'm waiting for a post-credit sting. But the special thanks to section, I've always, my eye has always been drawn to that. And I've always, there's got to be a great story behind why that person in particular has been thanked. And more often than not, there is a great story behind that. But the David Lowery thing is interesting because I noticed he pops up. And I spoke to David Lowery about this very, very briefly. And he basically was just like, oh, no, it's just, yeah, you know, I just, people ask me for advice, I give him advice. But
he's a helpful looking man.
He is a very, very helpful looking man. David Lowery, listen to your friend David Lowery. And, you know, I spoke to Jared Johnstone, the director of Megan and Megan 2.0. And I spoke to, who else did I speak to? God, I can't remember who else. Ty West. I spoke to Ty West. So, yeah. It was, it's a good feature. There's a good one next month as well. But anyway, Nick.
Chris, it's
press day calls.
We may have sold our souls, but I think it was worth it for this episode of Shameless Plug.
We have struck a fast
impact. What have we done? Satan himself has just turned up, and he's opening a briefcase. Which can only mean the time has come to fulfill our pact. Yes. Anyway, it's been fun.
It has been fun.
Thank you for this.
It's been good. Now you have to go back and finish another issue, which we'll be talking about in 2 weeks' time. And we'll do the listener questions next week.
Yes.
Next week. All right, but thank you. And keep them coming. If you listen to this episode and you have a question that you want me or Nick to talk about in terms of how the sausage gets made, send them in.
Anything
I'm on Twitter.
You want to know. Yeah.
Chris Hewitt on Twitter, Chris Hewitt on Blue Sky, send in those questions and we will tackle the best ones in that special. All right. Bye, Nick.
Bye, Chris.
I'm off to spend 3 days with James Cameron. Fuck you.
Hey.
Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.